Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
O'Connor, trial lawyer, author of the book Postgate and how the Washington Post betrayed Deep Throat and covered up Watergate and began today's partisan advocacy journalism. He served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, representing the United States both in criminal and civil law. He does have a website, postgatebook.com. You can also pick up the other book there called The Mysteries of Watergate. John, good to see you, friend. How are you?
Hey, great, Perry.
Thank you for your time. All right. What is the John O'Connor take of the indictment?
Well, of course, it's a terrible indictment, as everyone who's looked at it says. Even we're beginning to see that on CNN and other places. And I think some Democrats are worried because this is going to give fuel to Trump's fire, that he's really being made a scapegoat and is an unfortunate victim of a witch hunt. That's what it looks like to everybody here. Now, the complaint itself is marvelously vague. They try to be specific, make it look specific. But when it gets down to the payoff punch, what the crime is that is supposedly being covered up by Trump's financial entries, they don't come up with one. They just say there was another crime they're hiding. And then when Bragg has a press conference, he names several crimes that might have been covered up, some imaginary crimes that aren't really crimes. But the point is, when you have an indictment, you have to be specific and give the defendant notice of the charges against him. That hasn't been done. The second thing an indictment cannot do, and I know from my days as a prosecutor, it cannot have the vice either of duplicity or multiplicity. And I will explain that to your viewers. A duplicitous indictment contains in one count several crimes, like a smorgasbord. Pick one of these crimes, and anyone will convict the guy. The problem with that is three jurors can think that crime number one has been proven. Three other jurors can think crime number two, and so forth and so on. And they can agree to a verdict, all 12 of them, but not on the same count. It may well be 9-3 in favor of acquittal on every single crime. So that's called a duplicitous indictment, and it's defective. A multiplicitous indictment takes one crime and spreads it over many, many counts so that the jury can get confused and they may acquit on 24 counts and convict on 25, but they're all the same count. So the prosecutor here is threaded the needle of being vague, being duplicitous, and being multiplicitous all at the same time, which is a very, very Herculean feat. It is very hard to be that bad in an indictment. And then to top it all off, the crime that probably is most likely to be charged to be as being covered up is a federal crime, alleged federal crime, where the feds have said there is no crime. Any good reading of the election law will tell you that it can't be a crime for various reasons. And furthermore, the states don't have jurisdiction over federal law, and you're going to have a state court judge instructing a jury as to what the standard is for a federal election law violation. I mean, the head spins on this. It makes no sense. And if I were a Democrat, Perry, I would say this is going to tar cases that are going to come afterwards that might actually have some substance to them. I think Trump's been targeted, but I think they may, for example, have a decent case on Mar-a-Lago, a technical obstruction charge. But they are shooting their wad, so to speak. They're shooting the gun and getting rid of all their cartridges here on a bad target. And now it's going to look bad whenever they do come up with a subsequent indictment. It will suffer in the public eye from that same concept that this is all a witch hunt. It's all about getting Trump.
All right, a lot there, John. Let me ask you this. Why didn't the judge require the explanation of the crime itself?
Well, because he hasn't been asked to yet. Formally, the defense would say, Judge, please dismiss this complaint. It's unconstitutionally vague. It does not give us notice of the charges against us and violates the Sixth Amendment and New York law. Now, if the judge gets it, if I'm the judge, I do one of two things. I either dismiss the complaint and tell the prosecutor to go back and get a new one, or better, I would ask him to give what is known as a bill of particulars, which you can do that states what the crime is. Now, the problem is, and this is another problem, let's say the prosecutor does that, says, okay, the crime is the election law crime number such and such, such and such. The problem is, has the grand jury really voted on that? Or did the grand jury itself vote on a duplicitous concept? That is to say, Bragg throws out four or five crimes that could be involved, and the jury goes, okay, there's probable cause. Well, what does that mean? So we don't even know what the grand jury voted on. If I were a judge, I would dismiss it, make Bragg come back, make him reconvene a grand jury, come back with an indictment with a specific charge, and I think that's the only way to do it. Then, once he does that, now the defense has something to shoot at. Right now, they have nothing to shoot at, other than the fact that it's vague. Now, if they come back and say it's an election law violation and they name it, that's when the defense then says, okay, for two reasons, you can't proceed with this. It's a federal crime, number one. And number two, it's alleged federal crime, and you can't prosecute that here in New York. And number two, under that law, Trump's not guilty of anything. Let me make it simple for your viewers, Perry. If I were running for office and I thought it'd be real good if I wore $10,000 suits, I cannot take my donors' money and buy $10,000 suits and then list it as a campaign expenditure. If I did, I would be violating the law because that's not a true campaign expenditure, even though I intended to help my campaign. If I buy a Bentley automobile, I may think this is going to help my campaign, but that would be ruled to be an improper campaign expenditure. And if I did buy it, spend it on that, it doesn't matter if I testified till I'm blue in the face that I did this for the campaign. Everybody would say this guy should be indicted. He bought a Bentley out of campaign funds. So that's the problem. And you can't, for instance, in John Edwards' case, the problem was he paid money as well to hush up his mistress. Some of his campaign contributors did. But the question is, that's not a campaign expenditure. So so how can he be violating campaign laws? Now, the John Edwards case, which John Edwards won eventually, had a wrinkle that Trump's doesn't. In John Edwards' case, he had contributors that were backing him that paid the money. Trump's paying the money himself. So he doesn't have the added vice of having somebody allegedly contributing to his campaign, and he's using those alleged contributions for an improper purpose. You don't even have that here. It's Trump's own money. So the question is, can Trump spend his own money on hushing up a mistress? And as unseemly as that is, that he's hushing up a mistress, it's not a campaign expenditure, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay. Is there some kind of a New York statute that says that the prosecutor doesn't have to tell what the crime is yet?
Well, he's taking that position because the law is, the way the statute reads, you make an incorrect financial entry, it's a misdemeanor, A, but B, if it's designed to hide another crime, it's a felony. Well, he thinks, looking at the literal words of the statute, all he has to be specific about is the original financial wrongdoing, the wrong financial entry, and then all he has to do is allege per the statute, gee, you're doing it to hide another crime.
Okay.
He's following the statute, but I still think it's vague, and he has to specify what the other crime is. The statute is silent on that, and so it's his own interpretation. And if I'm the judge, I'm going to say, wait a second. If it's tied to another crime, you got to name the other crime. The statute doesn't say that, but common sense would dictate you read the law in a reasonable way, and a reasonable way of reading this would say, if you're going to make this a felony and he's got to stand to answer for it, you better tell him what the other crime is that he's hiding.
All right. So a lot of talk about bootstrapping a misdemeanor to a felony. If the felony falls apart, does the misdemeanor go away?
Well, yes, because you have a 2-year statute of limitations. And if this happened 7 years ago, Bragg thinks he can reduce that 7 years to 5 by citing enough time that Trump was out of New York State so that the statute does not run during that time. But it's very hard for him to claim that the 2-year statute has not run, because Trump has probably spent since 2016 enough time in New York such that the 2-year statute has already run. So maybe they can get, even if they get him on the misdemeanor, it's kind of like a so what. That's the kind of thing you get a community service for 30 days or something like that, an in-home confinement.
So I only got a couple of minutes left with you, and I want to honor your request there. Let me ask you this, John. Does this go away? I mean, can the judge afford to go ahead with this and have this on his record and then fall apart later?
Well, if I'm the judge, I'm caught betwixt and between. I do not want to be the guy that got rid of Trump's case. He's got 85% registration in New York, and he's got to run for reelection. So I ask you, if you're in his shoes, are you going to be the guy that's accused of getting rid of Trump's case when there are ardent supporters of the indictment out there? I think if I were he, well, let me put it this way. I would predict that he would sort of punt this to the appellate court and say, you know something, I don't know about your motion, Mr. Defendant. I encourage, here's what I'm going to rule, either for or against the indictment, but I'm going to want the appellate court to determine this. Let's say he says the indictment's okay. Well, Tacopina and the other fellow that Trump's hired, take it up immediately for an interlocutory appeal. If I'm the judge, I'm going to encourage you to take an interlocutory appeal. Then you wash your hands of it. If the appellate court says, oh, no, this is fine, then the judge is covered. Then you have a trial in which the judge is going to instruct the jury on election law, federal election law, and he's going to probably get it all wrong. So we're going to have a real brouhaha. If he instructs them the wrong way, Trump could get convicted. So it is not out of the question that Trump gets convicted on this.
Not to mention that there's two other potential other cases. You have the Mar-a-Lago with classified information, and then I guess you still have some stuff left over with the phone call to the Secretary of State of Georgia.
Yeah. The only one of these cases that's any good will be Mar-a-Lago, and it won't be regarding mishandling of classified documents. It will be a process crime. Either lying or hiding documents, or telling somebody to lie or hide documents. And I think if I were to read the tea leaves, Perry, I would say that case brought by Jack Smith, investigated, will probably end up being indicted. And I also think it's going to look like a much better charge. It's going to be looks like the same thing they got Nixon on, a cover-up. So I think he's in trouble there, if I had to bet. And I don't know how the public's going to react after all this brouhaha over this terrible case before us. When Smith comes along with an indictment that to a legal analyst such as I would look like it's legitimate, even though targeting Trump, I mean, all that, nobody else would be charged with this, but nonetheless, it's a legitimate charge. It remains to be seen how that's going to play out in the public. Some people may paint the Smith indictment with the same broad brush they're painting this one and say it's a witch hunt. Or it could be that Smith's indictment then makes clear to everybody, oh, well, Trump was guilty of something. So how this is going to play out in the court of a public opinion is very, very dicey. It's subject to so many changes in public perception. How does this affect DeSantis? If I'm a Republican and I want to win the 2024 election, I have to start thinking, wait a second, I may like all Trump's policies or most of them, but is he the best standard bearer for our cause when DeSantis will run 10 points ahead of Trump in any hypothetical matchup against a Democrat? So people will have to start looking at some point as to whether we want to carry this whole brouhaha, as unfair as it may be to Trump, carry this brouhaha into the 2024 election when he may be doomed with the middle of the road people, with the suburbanites, women voters, independents, because the Smith indictment will be down, will be out by then, and the possibility real that Trump could be thrown in prison because of that. So I think if I'm a Democrat, I'm going to sit back and keep my options open. If I'm a Republican, I'm going to sit back and keep my options open. If I'm a Democrat, I'm going to say we ought to get rid of this present case because it's so terrible and wait for Smith. But everything is going to hinge on the Smith case, the Mar-a-Lago obstruction case. And then the question is, what should we do as conservatives to win the 2024 election?
John, thank you. You let us squeeze in. I know you're on a tight schedule. God bless you, my friend. Go to postgatebook.com. That's John's website. Check out both books, The Mystery of Watergate and Postgate. That's at postgatebook.com. Thank you, John. Talk to you soon.
Good talking to you, Perry.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.